Welcome to the Subtle Reformation Podcast. We're so glad that you can join us. I'm one of the hosts, Ben.
And I'm Stephen. And we're really glad that you've joined us to listen to us muse about formation and what it means for who and how we can be in this world.
Well, welcome back to the Subtle Reformation Podcast. It's great to have you joining us today. Today, we're doing something a little bit different. We're doing a little bit of a, I guess, an anticipatory podcast where we are going to be discussing just a few little things for our upcoming project that is happening over the next few weeks. We're going to look at, I guess it's literally an assignment that that Stephen's done with some students that we're going to get to participate in as a part of our formation journey. And so, Stephen, we're going to just have a little chat with you, and then we're going to ask some questions so that hopefully we as a team are on the same page, but also our listeners can hopefully be, I guess, expectant and aware of what's coming up and what it's going to involve for them. So over to you, mate.
Thanks, mate. Well, yeah, look, we've often mentioned a fellow by the name of Rowan in our podcasts. For many of us, we've encountered him as a teacher and as a friend. And I remember the first time he asked me if I would teach a spiritual formation subject. I didn't know it was a spiritual formation subject. And he said, you know, would you teach this subject? And I said, no way. and he said, why is that? And I remember I had a particular lecturer at the time, and his lectures were rubbish. Like, they were terrible. But what I would do is, we had a half hour break in between, you know, the first part of the lecture and the second part of the lecture. And there was a coffee shop just around the corner. So I would take him out for a coffee. And that half an hour was when I did the most learning. And I found these interpersonal dialogues in between the lecture were so rich, and the lectures were just rubbish by comparison. And I didn't want to be that guy. You know, I didn't want to be that kind of lecture who was really boring because they were bound by the unit guide. And I remember saying to Rowan, you know, that unit guide with the assessments and the assignments, I said, it's like a prison. It locks you in. You can't actually engage people around the stuff that matters in the subject. And Rowan just said, well, why don't you write the assessments accordingly? And he used this phrase, and it's always stayed with me for life, not just for, you know, teaching.
Sure.
But for life. He said, assessment drives learning. And stay with that. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where you are teaching, like if you're kind of teaching a subject and somebody says, is this going to be on the exam? And that question drives me nuts. And I remember saying that to Rowan, and Rowan said, well, put that question on the exam. The actual question you want them to be dealing with, put that into the exam. So over the years, and unfortunately, Ben, your generation was kind of the guinea pig as we tried to figure this out.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
we tried to develop this process where people didn't just write essays or write papers, but they had to do something, and then their paper was a reflection on something they did. And it's hilarious because you get those students who don't do it, they don't do the activity, and then they try to reflect on something they haven't done. It's really obvious. Like after two or three years of teaching, it's really obvious who has and hasn't done the thing. And over the years, we experimented with all sorts of things. Like I said, with your cohort at one institution, and then when Rowan and I were invited to teach at a different institution, that was Tom and Tom's generation. We were able to kind of reflect back on that experience, and we came up with this framework that season two really is all about, and what we've been leading to. So getting people to think about formation, and having Peter give us some really fantastic input on that. The place of the Enneagram, so this process that we've developed over 15 years, the role that the Enneagram plays in it. And then, of course, the contemplation episode, thinking about the pragmatics of, because you hear contemplation, and the average person who hears the phrase contemplation, they go, that's something mystical or spiritual, or it's something that only a particular elite do. The rest of us, we've got jobs and relationships, and, you know, some of us have kids, and so that's kind of beyond us. So we really wanted to kind of ground some of those things and define them before we invited people into this process. So So we're kicking off this process next week, and the whole thing hinges on spending 10 minutes a day doing a particular thing, and then we build on it week after week. Originally, this started as this assignment actually went over the whole year. It took February to November with periodic assessment. But we're just going to do it over 5 weeks and give people a little bit of a taste. And we're going to do it together with our listeners, and we're going to be sharing our own experiences. So how's that? Is that helpful as a bit of an overview?
I think that's great. I think that really helps explain what we're setting up for the next 5 weeks. And I'm really looking forward to it because I love the fact that we as a team are doing it and are actually going to be sharing a bit more, I guess, in real time what's going on for us rather than just sitting here sharing theories and thoughts. So I think that'd be really cool. I'm looking forward to engaging with our listeners about it as well and seeing what's going on for them.
I really want to, if we have time, when you say you love this fact, what does that mean?
I think it's the best way to do it. And I think I love the fact that we're actually really involved in what's going on and we're actually participants in what's happening. I think that's what I really love about this. I think too often sometimes you can hear, not necessarily podcasts, but people talk about frameworks and, you know, 7 steps to do this and 4 ways to do that. Mm. And you never necessarily see them go through it. And so I like the fact that we can actually be a part of what's going on. So that's what I love.
Yeah, because I anticipate there's going to be some hilarious conversations as we talk about, on the third day, I realized that lying down and doing it wasn't helpful because I kept falling asleep.
Yeah, that's
right. So look, we've arranged, we've got the whole team here this morning. We've got Tom and Julia. We thought we might start with Julia first, because Julia, you probably represent a group of listeners who've not been in a classroom doing something like this. Although, as I say that, you have been in a classroom and you have done things like this, but I guess perhaps not in this particular way. Mm. Whereas Tom experienced this a few years ago after Rowan and I had a good, 10, 15 years to experiment on people like Ben. So we thought we'd work backwards chronologically. So good morning and welcome, Julia. How are you feeling? What are you thinking when we say we're gonna have this 5-week experiment in contemplative living? What's going on for you?
Well, once I know what it is, then that will also help with the rest of all the questions that go through my mind. But no, I think it's great because unfortunately, I mean, I live in my head. I'm a thinking person. And so, again, I think the danger is that everything gets kind of locked in there. So the opportunity to let it, sink down into heart, out into, action, and then the reflection is so important because, this is about a beautiful, intimate relationship with God. Like, ultimately, that's, God loves to be with us, hang out with us. And so, any opportunity for, practicing and engaging in that is absolutely what it's all about. Otherwise, all of us become, I'll talk for myself. I become, someone who has seemingly, can answer things in the right way, or, sounds like I have some sense of things, but, when you're in that sort of naked place with God, that God knows, and that's not to be, condemning or anything like that, but just that this, ultimately all of this comes back to relationship with God, and that, that whatever we decide with the time that we put in, or the, you know, the openness that we have to God will always be fruitful, because God, you know, delights in being with us. So I think it's great, and it'll be fun to hear. I mean, I've just plan on coming as I am, and, you know, just, yeah. So some of the observations and things, it's, I guess there's always moments where vulnerability's, you know, needed, because it always sounds so great to, you know, I think there's a part of me that wants to, you know, do this stuff really well, and, you know, and sound like you've got it together. But I think the much better to just name things as they are, and kind of have that, yeah, that rawness of it. So I'm looking forward to, I'm with the listeners. I'm the audience that have never engaged in this, and apprehensive, you know, thinking, oh, well, I'll give it a go. 10 minutes isn't so bad. That's, you know, like sipping on a coffee. That's kind of that time. So I can do that. Yeah.
Have you got any, you know, sort of practical questions, as silly as they may sound inside of your head?
Oh, gosh, a plethora of practical questions. But like I said, I have no idea what this is. So therefore, I have no idea, like, questions like what, when, how, and possibly, well, the why is probably a little more formed. So, yeah, all of those.
So I guess in terms of the what, each podcast episode from here on in, we'll actually spend that episode talking about the what. So the first week where we kick off, we're basically going to be talking about what we're asking everybody to do in week one. But then in subsequent weeks, so, you know, the episode after that, we'll be reflecting on how did you go with this week's assignment, and then we will be setting up for next week's assignment. So
stay tuned.
Yeah, so we'll get into the nuts and bolts of what it is that you're going to be asked to do each week. But so hopefully that alleviates part of your angst. Any other sort of questions or thoughts in your head? So just more issues around the content?
Yeah, and just the, you know, the invitation. I think in all of this, you know, there's delightful invitation of God. That's probably just me soothing myself, because sometimes I can feel under stress of, you know, someone expecting something, you know, of me that, yeah, I'm like, I don't really know what the expectations are, and you know, so yeah. I mean, it's interesting with sevens, Enneagram sevens. Sorry if that always, I use the word seven and then people go, what? What are you talking about? Is that, you know, we can be very sort of lighthearted and stuff, but there's, I don't know, for me, there's a reasonable amount of anxiety around expectations as well, and feeling like I, you know, can miss the mark of that. So, yeah, I think I just want to say to those listeners listening, this is a beautiful experiment and invitation to just give something a try. Like, no one starts at all good at anything that they begin in. I think that's the danger as adults, is that we get to a point, well, for me, that you think that you've got, you know, like I've learned some stuff, I've developed some stuff, but then, you know, there's this weird thing that happens when we have to start something new in us, and somehow we have this unrealistic expectation that we're going to be great at it to begin with. We suck at stuff to begin with. You know, so I think that's the part of it too, is just, you know, we're all gonna give this a go collectively, and we would love input and feedback on that, because that I mean, I get enriched by other people's experiences and a journey of it. So yeah, but to not see it as some, oh, I can't join in, or I didn't do it on X day or whatever, so therefore, you know, I'm unqualified or excluded from the next few weeks of the podcast. It's just, you know, you can go back and begin again or start again, or just, you know, every day's a new. So that's my.
I was just imagining as you were talking, Julia, I was thinking our Slack, because we use Slack to communicate with each other. I thought it's going to be really busy as we, I did this, am I doing it right? And then I remembered we set up a Facebook group and an Instagram group for this reason. So if you want to join us, use the listener if you want to join us. And you have, and I'm pretty convinced that there is no such thing as a stupid question. There's mischievous questions, but there's no stupid questions. We feel like it's a stupid question because we are feeling ignorance in a dictionary sense. We're feeling our ignorance. And when we realize we don't know something, we think, oh, everybody else knows this, therefore my question is stupid. But I find that the vast majority of people who ask what they feel is a stupid question, just about everybody else in the room has the same question, but everyone's too afraid to ask it because of that. Yeah, just ask. I'm one of those really annoying people who just asks questions because I have no shame. So I don't know. And I'm the youngest child. I don't know. I feel left out and I need to know this in order to not feel left out anymore. And it's great. Most people find that annoying, but a lot of my teachers over the years find it, they call it delightful curiosity.
That's good.
Hey, Tom, let's hear from you. Because just for our listeners, we do this via Zoom so we can see each other. So I'm looking at Tom and I'm saying, Tom, you did it. And then I'm doing those things with my fingers, you know, the little quotation.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. I mean, yeah, you say I did it, but I definitely did not. I remember being told what to do. And I remember maybe trying it once. I remember thinking about fudging it at the end of the year in a reflection, but I didn't even do that.
And of course, no one else on this team has ever done anything like that on an activity before, have we, guys?
Yeah, a bit of shame there, to be honest. I'm really excited to try this. I'm looking forward to it. I feel like I really do understand the why now, so I want to give it a go. And I'm really glad we're doing it together because I think doing it myself, it's always harder to justify challenging and building a discipline on your own. Because if you let yourself off, you kind of feel like it's not a big deal. But I'm really glad we've got a couple people around us. So I think if I was a listener, I would definitely want to rope a friend in and just make sure that I've got at least back and forth messages with somebody. Okay, well, the first question that I had was, and this is probably for people I'm representing in terms of being a young adult, like, do I need to wake up at the same time every day to make it consistent?
Well, my answer to that is yes, because the time frame is so short. We've only got a week. I can't remember the source. I don't know what the statistics are these days, but when I was a boy, when I was your age, I came across a statistic that said it takes between 30 and 90 days to form a habit. So if you do something 5 days out of seven across 30 to 90 days, eventually it will become habitual. You'll do that habitually. And we're working with really short time frames. We're only working with 1 week at a time over 5 weeks. And then in my head, I moved on to the next subject, and the next subject being, I'll do it when I find time. It just never happens in my experience. You've actually got to, you don't find the time to do this stuff. You've got to make the time to do this stuff. They're two very different approaches. Mm-hmm. Because you find, if you look back on your day, the things you did are the things you actually wanted to do. And the things that you didn't do are the things that you didn't want to do. And because this is new, I do think you need to say, okay, this is going to be the set time. But the challenge then is you've got to pick a realistic time. So I think when can I realistically grab 10 minutes. And I reckon it's probably more 15 minutes, because it's 10 minutes doing the thing. And depending on your personality and your context, you're going to need, you know, anywhere between 1 to 10 minutes to then record what just happened. So there's a recording aspect to it as well. But, you know, if you regularly wake up at, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning, and you think, well, I'm gonna wake up at 6:30 to do this. With a week, that's probably not going to happen. If you're in a situation where you have a regular lunchtime, saying, okay, maybe I'm going to do this at the beginning of my lunchtime, you know, the middle of my lunchtime. Like, try to work it into your existing framework rather than, you know, creating something unrealistic. Because it's, I really don't think it's going to happen in a short space of time. But that's my personality. I mean, you guys, what do you think when you hear me say that sort of stuff?
That might be the real challenge. 10 minutes a day to put aside is one thing, but to actually getting up at the same time every day is pretty interesting, but that will be fun to do. I'm going to do that anyway. I feel like it's going to be helpful for me, especially in quarantine. Like, there's no structure or routine for me at the moment. So I really, like, I'm kind of desperate for some routine in my life. So I'm kind of looking forward to that.
I get a reputation sometimes for being a bit of a mongrel. Often I'd have students saying, oh, can I do it while I'm running? And I would say, yes, but you can do that on your own time. For the purposes of this assignment, I don't want you to be running when you do it. I want you to sit still. And they're like, oh, that's so unfair. And I'm like, well, you know, you signed up for the subject. This is the assessment. This way.
I've got a question, another one.
Yeah, go on.
So, well, two big ones here. One is, what exactly am I observing? Because 10 minutes of silence is fine. Mm. And I do remember was kind of writing down some of the nuisances at the start. But after that, when it kind of gets a little quiet, what exactly am I supposed to be detaching from and observing?
Yeah, so we'll go into the detail each week with the specifics. But one of the overall objectives here, because we don't realise just how active our minds are. We don't realise how much is going on. So this is an attempt to try and act as an observer. And week one is just observing. That's it. And we'll talk about this in the next episode. You know, one of the biggest challenges there is the incredible amount of processing we do with the things that are in our head. And then week two, we're going to look for patterns. Week three, we're actually going to be reflecting upon our day in retrospect, trying to see where those patterns played out. Week four is trying to catch ourselves during the day in those patterns, in those behaviours. And then week five is going to be an attempt to preempt some of those patterns playing out. So that's a snapshot. We'll go in great detail. But for the first week, and this is often the hardest, it's just trying to observe how dynamic our mental and our emotional life is. And people who do this, and again, try not to hear this in a judgmental way, but people who give this a red hot shot, they come back and they say, I had no idea just how active my mind is. I had no idea how full my head was. I had no idea how full my heart was. Mm. And that's the stuff that ultimately makes decisions in our lives, in our interactions, in our relationships, the choices we make about all sorts of things. It's this vast milieu of thoughts and feelings that we don't realise. And I tend to offend a lot of people in a class context when I say to them, you think you're an individual, but you are effectively a collection of other people's ideas. You're a collection of other people's opinions. And people find that really offensive because, you know, when we're a young adult, when we're sort of emerging and finding our own independence from our family, which I've got my own ideas, I've got my own opinions. And it's only later on in life. And I hate saying that sometimes because, you know, I'm the condescending old person who knows better than you. But it just happens. As you get older, you realise, actually, yeah, I'm not my own person. I'm living out, you know, this person's idea or this group's philosophy or, you know, this community's ideologies. Right. And modern Australian culture doesn't really have a wisdom tradition. That's why our sort of mental health bills are so significant, because we don't have these traditions that encourage us to withdraw and reflect and then engage again.
Okay, I've got another one. I remember, this is my last one, I remember having a time where I did this and I was super motivated and ready to go and it felt like it was fine. But any other time I've tried it, I feel like after 4 minutes, I just wanted it to be over, and I really wanted that. And so I spent 6 minutes just kind of like, you know, arguing with the clock. So my question is, like, if I feel like I spend most of the time waiting for it to be over, have I failed? Did I do it wrong?
No. I was really excited when I love when I find somebody else's words in a reputable book or journal who say or think the same thing I do. It's such a vindicating experience. Just turning up is enough. Just turning up is enough.
That's such a relief.
Turning up and sitting for 10 minutes and thinking it's the stupidest thing, and you know, you've broken the clock because you punched it because you were so frustrated. What you did in those 10 minutes is almost irrelevant. The fact that you turned up for 10 minutes, that's it. Done.
I wish the listeners could see what you just did looking at you on Zoom. You literally jumped out of your chair and your facial expression was insane.
Yeah.
But that's my last one.
It's tricky because I'm older and I have kids. And because I often say to people, you know, and I find this a lot, this is a lot of, not just people's Christian experience, but anyone who has any kind of faith that has some kind of higher power at the centre of it, the sense that they've disappointed a higher power in some way, shape or form. And I say to people, who have children, if your child comes to you with the first drawing they've ever made, as a parent, do you look at it and go, that is so bad? Like, that is pathetic. I can't, like, what is this? Like, this is rubbish. Go back and try. Like, what parent would do that to a child? And of course, what do parents do? Like, if you're anything like me, as a parent, you're looking at it going, oh my God, I have no idea what this is, but I don't want to disappoint this little child because they've given it their best shot. And you're so encouraging, you know, all things being equal, you know, reasonably healthy family environment, etc. There's a sense where you want to be really super encouraging that this person has taken their first step. You know, when a child's learning how to walk, they kind of take two steps and fall down on their backside. I've never seen a parent go, oh, well, you're a loser. Get back up, for goodness sake. That was terrible. But somehow we take this experience and we project that onto, you know, whatever kind of person of faith we are, we project that onto our higher power and we think that's the experience. But as a parent, our children, the primary school they went to, the report for each subject, their kind of school report for each subject, at the very end, there was a rating for attitude, I think. Attitude was one. And I forget the exact word, but it was the degree to which they tried, the degree to which they gave it a shot. And Lisa and I would always look at those two first before we looked at anything else. And if we saw that they gave it their best shot and they got a really bad mark, it didn't matter. They gave it a shot. They turned up and they tried. Not this give them a reward for turning up and coddle people, but I find that the people who tend to be a gift to others in the world are the people who just keep coming back, the bloody-minded, they just keep trying again and again and again. And that's how you get better at stuff. You just got to keep going. You just got to keep trying. So just turning up, just giving it a shot is great, I think.
Mm. Yeah, I feel like that takes a lot of pressure off, because I'm thinking in my mind, how am I going to perform in this 10 minutes? Mm. Am I going to do good enough if I, yeah. So anyway, that's the last of my questions. So I'm pretty settled here. I'm excited to give it a go.
Mm-hmm. Cool. How about you, Ben? The in my world and in my experience, the guinea pig generation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to this. This is I was probably similar to Tom when I was doing Year in the Sun. Not necessarily someone who engaged wholeheartedly in everything that was going on. Just enjoying the fact that I was living out of home with the boys and having a lot of fun doing that. So, but it's been something that I've really engaged in personally as I did some more spiritual formation stuff with my theological studies. And so it's something that I'm just really looking forward to. I try and practice a bit of silence and contemplation semi-regularly in my life. So I'm looking forward to doing it a little bit more intentionally. And I guess rather than just having these thoughts and ruminations in my own head and writing them down in my own little journal, I'm actually being able to have some conversations with some other people about it, I think will be cool. And yeah, I'm sure there's going to be some things that I'll learn just even from listening to others that I wouldn't have been able to pick up and get myself. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm ready to really lean in and give it a crack for the next 5 weeks. So it'll be good. I'm looking forward to, I think, probably the back end steps of weeks, from what you said, weeks 3, 4, and 5. I think that'll be where it probably deviates from what I normally do and will kind of be the step out and a bit more of a, okay, this is a bit more of a challenge for me now trying to make this happen, because it feels more like acting on it and living it out. So.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. He says with an evil grin on his face. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just, as you were talking those last few seconds there, Ben, I was thinking those weeks, that's when we really start to see, as Pete was talking about in episode 2, when we actually start to see the influences, and they can be uniquely, or in combination, they can be uniquely painful when we see something. They can be uniquely hilarious when we realise, oh my goodness. Often they're both at the same time. They're uniquely painful and hilarious. And I'm just thinking, as a group of people doing this, hopefully with others, in dialogue with others beyond just the podcast team, well, this is not about shaming or embarrassing any of you or us, but as best we can, sharing some of those painful discoveries is the stuff that really helps others, I think.
Mm.
Pop quiz. Well, it's not a quiz. It's an information gathering exercise. So I'll ask each of you time of day. What are you thinking in terms of time of day, in terms of your personality and your routine? Julia, what do you reckon is going to work for you?
Well, at the moment, since I really don't have a life, which is really quite depressing, and oh my goodness. So
Julia, Tom and I, we're in a region that's stage 4 lockdown, so we're only allowed out of the house an hour a day.
Yeah.
And I'm meant to be church planning, and, you know, how do you church plant when, or form a new community when you can't even get together with people? But anyway, lots of questions. Nothing to do with the question you just asked. First thing in the morning, so I'll do it probably, well, I'm not a really super early in the morning, so I reckon about 8 o'clock before the day. Yeah, sit down with a cuppa and just, yeah, so that's the time frame that'll work for me.
And you're a newly minted empty nester too, aren't you?
I know, goodness, you know, yeah, there's lots of transition going on this year. I'll probably look back on it and go, no wonder I am losing the plot at times. This is the whole reason I need therapy.
Because I hear you say 8 o'clock, and I, as a father of 3, you know, 2 at high school, 1 at primary school, I just think 8 o'clock, no way. That's like peak mayhem at our house, so... 8 a.m. is just not going to work at all for someone like me. So Yeah, I'm probably going to be sort of 6, 10 past 6 in the mm-hmm. morning, because, well, I'll explain in a second why I do that. But Tom, how about you, Tom?
Yeah, so this week's a huge week for me. I've got a deadline to be...
Lucky we start next week.
Yeah, true, technically. But in a lifetime, I am moving house, and that's going to be done by Sunday. And all my responsibilities kind of climax. So I'm going to do it real early in the morning. I'm going to wake up at 6, but I'm going to do it at 6:30. Mm. So that's going to be the only time I'll really be able to do it and not stress about all the things that I need to do in the day.
Mm. Cool. What about you, Ben?
Probably about 7:45, I think. Mm. I tend to get up and go to the gym, and or I'm doing a podcast recording. And then I ride to work. So if I do it somewhere between the two, like I'll have a bit of brekkie after going to the gym, and then I'll have slowed down enough, because you can't contemplate after you've just worked out or exercised, because your heart rate's going too fast. Mm. You can't sit still. So 7:45 should be good to go. 10 minutes, relax, and then I can ride calmly and peacefully.
just once again, because we hear the word contemplate and we associate all sorts of things with that word. If you're anything like me, it's got nothing to do with calm, and it's got nothing to do with...
No, not at all.
If anything, it's the opposite.
Yeah, I might actually ride faster to work.
Or not at all.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry, guys, can't come in today.
So working backwards, starting with Ben, place, physical space.
I've got like a garage that's converted into an office, and so I have a desk there where I have all of my, you know, just stuff set up, and I can clear it and have a nice non-interrupted space. I'm also helped by the fact my wife leaves before me for work, so I can just go out into this room, close the door, and it's quiet and peaceful and no distractions.
Mm. How about you, Tom, in the midst of transition?
I've got a really comfortable carpet floor in the office, so I'm just going to make myself comfortable there.
Nice.
Nice. Very good. Sitting on the floor? Yeah. Yeah. Ben, when you say the office, sitting on a chair doing this?
Yeah, sitting on a chair, just a nice comfy chair I got out there. It'll do the job.
Cool. How about you, Julia, physical space?
Yeah, so bedroom, looking out the window to see, probably to get distracted. I just thought that's actually, that gives away more than, night out on a nice scene and, you know, got a comfy chair right next to the window. So yeah, that's probably the place that I'll do it in, I would say.
Mm. I actually do mine in bed. I get one of those other pillows that, you know, sort of props yourself up in a sitting position, and then I'll put my normal pillow in front of that, and I'll sort of sit in an upright position. It's interesting. I remember hearing a fellow by the name of Tony Campolo years ago talking about, because I'm a one, so we're an aesthetic, so I used to, you know, get up. It had to be hard, you know, like contemplation. It had to be hard. It had to be on a hard wooden floor, cold, that sort of classic. And I remember him talking about him just spending some time at the beginning of the day sitting in bed doing this. And he would lie in bed doing this. And I remember thinking, oh, that is cheating. You can't do that. But I thought, but that's Tony Campolo. You know, he's a bit of a legend. He's, you know, a bit of an activist. He's, you know, quite the transformative person. And I thought, well, I can't really tell Tony off. And it revolutionized my life. I'm just going to do this in bed. And having said that, I'm one of those people who, like, once I'm up, I'm up. I can't, like, going back to bed. So if one of my children is having, you know, some asthma issues, I hate having to be the parent who gets out of bed. My partner, she's just gifted with this ability to fall right back to sleep. I can't do that. Once I'm up, my brain is going. So, yeah, so in bed, 10 past 6 in the morning in an upright position. That's going to be me. Recording mechanism. So we're going to have to record stuff. Any thoughts on how you're going to record that?
Yeah, I mean,
you, oh, Ben.
I can go. I've got a little notebook that I just have with me that I write my thoughts and stuff down in. So I'll just be using that as per normal.
And how do you write stuff? We'll go over this in more detail next week. How do you write stuff? Just dot points?
Yeah, dot points. But then sometimes like I'll write like a big chunk word for word of information or like some thoughts. And then I write down like my thoughts and then my reactions to those thoughts. Like, so it might be like, I've just had a thought about something to do with myself and my relationship with, say, my brother. I'd be like, oh, write that down. And then be like, oh, and why, and what does that make me feel or think? So, yeah.
Do you do that during or after?
Depends. If it's early on, I do it during because I go, I'm unlikely to come back to this at the end. But if it's towards the back end, I just kind of sit with it because I know that I'm going to come out of this shortly and I'll be able to write it down.
Tom, you were waving away there.
Yeah, I'm dangerously close to the end of my journal here. I've got enough pages for the next 7 days, but after that, I'm going to have to get something that looks a bit cooler. But yeah, I got my trusty little nice leathery feeling journal. A little bit of a job.
Dude, get a moleskin one for your next one.
Yeah.
Aren't they the fancy ones?
So help me out here, guys. Is it moleskin or moleskine? I've heard people pronounce it both ways.
Surely it's just moleskin.
Yeah. I'm not going to say it the other way. It sounds pretentious.
No, yeah, it does not.
For the record, I used the cardboard moleskin one, not the, you know, the,
yeah.
it looks like a shopping bag, an old school shopping bag. Yeah. And Tom, during or after?
Sorry, what's that for?
When you're recording, do you kind of record as you go during your 10 minutes or do you do it after?
I think I write down the nuisances that I can't get off my mind during and then try to make it just space. But yeah, after. So after I write my reflection.
Yeah, cool. How about you, Julie, recording mechanism?
Less work, more Disney journal.
He says holding up a Disney journal.
Yeah. And I have no idea what I'm doing. So. I will let you know whether I'll be recording it at the time or afterwards.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I kind of do a bit of a comp. I'm written as well. Having done this for years, I use a system where if it's something to do with, you know, the podcast, I've got to talk to Ben about something, I'll just write the word Ben. And if your brains are similar to mine, I don't think something once. I think it repetitively. So if I think about that, if it crops up again, I then use the old school Roman numeral system. So one downward stroke, two, three, four downward strokes, and then the fifth one you cross. You go across the four. And it's not uncommon for me. It's not uncommon to have, like, one time, my record is 95 times. I thought about the same thing 95 times. So, so I just put a word or two words at most. Because once I start writing, it's all over. So I'll put one or two words and then I'll just keep tally marks next to each time it comes up. You know, did I turn the oven off? Oven. I thought about it again. One. Thought about it again. Two. Oh, Ben. Podcast, Ben. So I just try to keep it as simple as possible. And then at the end of it, I can see, you know, where my mind spent most of its time. Cool. All right. Look, I think that might be enough in terms of practical. I mean, has anyone thought of anything else in sort of practical terms? Questions your friends or people you know might have about embarking on this exercise?
No, I'm fine.
Cool. Well, as part of the show notes, Ben, we'll put a link to the Instagram and Facebook page.
Yeah.
And if anyone has any questions or comments about any of their, I don't want to say anxiety. Anxiety is probably too strong a word, but just, you know, their any kind of anticipation, anything that's going on about launching into something like this for the first time, just leave us a note, leave us a comment. We'll interact with you guys and we'll give it a crack and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, sounds good. Looking forward to it. But thanks again for listening to the Subtle Reformation podcast. We hope you've enjoyed it and are excited and ready for the next few weeks together. As Stephen said, feel free to connect with us on Facebook or Instagram. Send us an email or connect with us via Anchor as well. But other than that, thanks for listening to the Subtle Reformation.